Welcome to the Gleeful Meeple, a podcast all about board games, where strategy meets laughter and every roll of the dice is a chance for shenanigans. In this episode, we talk about who we are and why we're crazy enough to start a podcast.
Woo.
We kick it into high gear to talk about our game of the show, Heat, Pedal to the Metal. And you, the Gleeples, get to play along as the hosts get put in the hot seat with this week's game challenge. All this while we pretend to know what we're doing. So buckle up, because we've put on our racing slicks for this one, and we're not slowing down for the hairpins. Co-conspirators, compadres, friends, welcome to the table.
Hey, it's Emily here.
Dwayne here.
Hey, I'm JK.
And I'm James. Guys, I have a surprise for you.
Oh?
In a realm where dice do dance, crafting heroes each a chance. Attributes rise, their stories told, in quests and battles yet untold. With every roll, a choice anew, shaping paths both tried and true. Race and class, align them right, forge heroes for a daring fight. Strategy reigns, and every move in this world will fates improve. What game am I?
Well, it's pretty broad. Is it Dungeons and Dragons?
No.
Is it role player?
That was my first
ding,
guess.
Ding, 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 yeah. Ding. Dwayne's got it. Good job, Dwayne.
Nice.
I would just like to say that role player is loosely based on the world of Dungeons & Dragons, so therefore, with an asterisk, my answer is semi-correct.
That's fair. That's
we
fair.
Do love our asterisks.
You can kiss my asterisks.
So, welcome to the Gleeful Meeple, everybody. Amazing to have friends around the table.
I'm excited to be here. This is cool.
Yeah.
So, why a podcast? I mean, you know, when we get together to play games, we kind of find ourselves talking about games just as much as we are playing them. And, you know, we kind of wanted to bring more people into the conversation. The next logical step? Obviously a podcast.
What better is a conversation than a recorded conversation that other people can listen to?
Plus, realistically, we're the last four people on Earth to actually participate in a podcast. So there we go. We're check that box. We're good.
I don't know, man. I think we're getting into the game just in time.
I can remember when I was in high school, one of my friends said, you know, one day everyone will have a talk show. And in some ways, I think he was correct.
Emily, are you just saying that, like, the podcast landscape has just been warming up, waiting for us to kind of hit it?
Okay. Yeah. That's They're fair. Just waiting for people like us.
Waiting for the glee. Miss need more glee. But really, we have an amazing group of gamers in our area, and we think it would be great to highlight their personalities and share some gaming stories. So we'll actually be inviting a lot of our friends to join the conversation, and we hope that you'll feel like they're your friends too. But really, now, I mean, about that group of gamers, the Gleeful Meeple isn't just a podcast.
So the Gleeful Meeple gaming group started out about 7 years ago. It was a local group that met up in East Nashville. If those of you outside of Nashville are listening, we are Nashville-based. This started out as a simple group with maybe four or five people kind of recurring on a regular basis coming out to play games, gradually built over time to the point where this initial group started about 250 different gaming events over the course of 4 to 5 years. We did some retooling recently. We put some more people in leadership. We kind of divided up the duties within our group to make it a little more palatable and easier to do. And we rebranded, and we are now Gleeful Meeple Gaming Group based out of Nashville. We currently have anywhere from 4 to 8 events each month, most of them board game based, but we do occasionally venture out into different sort of gaming, whether that be putt-putt, putt shack, disc golf, kickball, or anything that we just want to get together and hang out with friends and have fun and talk about games.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary, JK. I mean, I can say personally, I've been part of the group for a number of years now, and I mean, truly, not a better group of people to play games with.
I get so excited to have people come to events who just decided, hey, I'll check this out. What games do you love? I don't know. Well, you have come to the right place. And a lot of our newer members just dive in. We have a lot of light games that hit the table at our events. We have some heavier games that hit the table. And it is great to see people just come in and open themselves up to whatever, who's going to teach their game, whatever they're going to provide.
I do remember the first night that James came out to a gaming event. We were at a local place in Franklin that has since closed. James and his wife were out buying a car that day.
That's right.
Yeah. Not even looking to come into our gameplay, but they walked into this room where every single table was somebody sitting around playing a game. And I was kind of at the front table playing Azul Stained Glass of Sintra, if I do recall. And you walked in the door, looked at my table, and called out what the game was. And I was like, oh, you need to hang out with us. You're drafted.
Yeah, my memory of that is looking down at the table, seeing your game, and then looking up and seeing a lot of other games and realizing what we had just walked into. And I was like, we got to come back here after we buy a car, babe.
And that's like the spirit of that board game group we want to bring to this podcast. We encourage wherever you're listening from, find your local board game group. If you can't make it out in person, then we would love for you to just be a fan of us and listen to our podcast.
Yeah, I feel like the recurring thing that I hear from new attendees to our events that stick around is eventually, you know what, after a few events, I just knew I had found my people.
Yes.
Like that's what everyone says. And so we think that, you know, those people, right, could share some love, share some inspiration, share their gaming story. So we will be inviting them on here over the episodes to have some fun. But we thought it might be good for you to get to know us.
So who wants to go to the hot seat first?
Ooh, is this asking questions or answering questions?
To answer questions.
Oh, save me for last.
Okay, JK's okay. Last. Dwayne?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm ready. I was born ready.
All right, I'll go ahead and kick it off. Dwayne, what has been your favorite cosplay to like wear at a convention or wherever you might wear cosplay?
Oh, I think you set me up for this one. Okay, so it has to be... Here's the thing. I have been told on more than one occasion that I share a slight resemblance to Rainn Wilson, who famously played Dwight Schrute on The Office.
Slight.
And I got it in my head one time at Dragon Con to dress up like Dwight, which is basically putting on a tie. And
wearing some beige colors.
Yeah, wearing some, you know, some earth tones as Dwight will. The response kind of blew me away because I usually do some cosplay that is so obscure. Like if I get a fist bump or two every night, I'm thrilled. I was not prepared for the response. And fortunately, my good friend Kyle was with me and he totally like took over as my handler on the spot.
That's
and
amazing.
It was a lot of fun.
Was this when you still had the beard or was the beard gone by this
point? No. This was like gone. Last year at Dragon Con.
Yeah.
Dwayne, question. Hobbies take time, and I don't know many people that stay as busy as you do with all of your hobbies. Is there one hobby you've had to put on the back burner that you wish you could give more time to because you just don't have time because you're so busy?
Oh, yeah. So my video game playing has decreased so much in the last few years, especially since I started doing a lot more solo board gaming, because if I'm not hanging out with our gaming group, I am typically sitting at the table. In fact, right now, I have a solo game set up that I was playing last night. So, yeah, I'd say overall, video gaming, which is still something I love to do from time to time, that has taken a backseat recently.
Dwayne, my question for you, who was your favorite Spice Girl and why?
I'd have to go with Posh Spice because she's very pretty.
I mean, let's be honest. They were all pretty.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of their appeal.
That's true. I don't know. Also, just Posh Spice is fun to say.
Fair.
All right. Thank you for taking the hot seat. Dwayne, our last question for you is, what was the game that got you into the board gaming hobby?
That is a very difficult question because I can't. I'm going to do this. I'm going to actually go back to childhood when I went into my attic one day and found my older half brother's, what must have been his board game in the attic. It was called Careers. And It's a roll and move, pretty simple, pretty Monopoly-esque, except like you have these side paths, and at the beginning of the game, you decide what your victory conditions are going to be. So it's like fame, money and wealth are the same thing. There's another stat too. I should have looked it up beforehand. Didn't know it was going to be a question. But so you decide like, okay, this you need 60 points of each. How do I want to break that up? And what do I want to go after? And that was the first time I ever saw a game that had end goals that you could decide for yourself. That was pretty neat.
Nice.
All right. Who is next on the hot seat?
I'll take it.
All right. Dwayne, you go first.
All right. Emily, what is a game that you wish more people knew about?
I think there's plenty of people that do know about this game, but not in our specific group, but I really love parks. I had a trip to Utah last year where I visited three national parks while I was there. And I had played this game once before this trip, found out later we kind of got some rules wrong. And so after this trip, it just reignited my love of hiking and outdoors. So I bought it for myself, bought trails, and I just try to get to a table anytime I can.
It's a great game. All right. My question for you, Emily. Prior to board games, were you into any geek hobbies, or has this been a gateway drug to geekdom?
Good one. Good one.
Let's see. I feel like I've lived a pretty tame life on the geek scale. I was in marching band in high school and in college. So depending where you put that on the geek scale, that's an answer. I really liked puzzles. Loved putting the pieces back into place. And yeah, from there, found the board game group and just like dove right in.
I think that's legitimate. Puzzles and board gaming go hand in hand in my mind. But what is a board game except finding out the most optimal way to complete the puzzle?
And now you've got modern puzzles that are also including little games and puzzles within the puzzle as well.
Yeah, the Venn diagram overlaps pretty closely, I think, between the two, or can.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Emily.
All right.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how overwhelming do you find me?
As you were asking that question, it was like at an 8 or a 9.
can confirm.
But one of like my early memories of JK was I was at my first like mini board game convention, Tennessee Game Days. I was about a few months into hanging out with the group, and like Dwayne and I are walking around the wall where people are like selling all their games. And I found this copy of Parade, and it was like for $5. And Dwayne was like, "That's a good buy. You should get it. Your family would like it." Cause that was my criteria at the time. I only wanted to own games that I knew I could bring to my family. And so I got it, come back to the table. JK asked me what I bought. I showed him Parade, gave me the thumbs up, smiled. And I was like, "Oh, he accepted it." Like, like he was like the father of our board game group. Like, that's what it felt like to me as one of the younger people.
Emily, your purchase pleases me.
So, yeah.
If you could have seen the stare that JK gave Emily when he asked her that question afterwards.
It was very intimidating.
I'm surprised her answer wasn't a 9.
Yeah. I was prepared for it to be like, I can't go on that scale. It's over 10.
But it's like, yeah, now I've known JK for over a year and it's lower.
His stares aren't so intimidating.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'm a lot on your first instance with me. I'll take that.
What board game brought you into the hobby?
All right. So I loved board games as a kid, but I was always kind of like, way younger than the rest of my family. And so I was horrible at them. But one game stuck out to me so much as a child, and it's called Facts in Five. This is a game from 1967. And I just looked this up the other day to see if they had any like more kind of like newer prints. And there was like one in 2007. But it's this game where you just have this like 5x5 grid where like the y-axis is the letters, the x-axis is the categories, and you just fill in the 5x5 grid within 5 minutes. And so it's one of those, like, we had one where it was like magazine titles, and it's like, I can name so many magazines, but I'm stuck on People magazine, and there's no P in my grid. And like as a kid trying to play it, I was like, I don't know any musicians of European descent. Because so, that's what the categories were like in the 1967 version.
Okay.
And so as I grew up, I was like, all right, we got to do this again. I am like, this was like when I was in college. I was like, all right, I'm 20. I know things now. We got to play it again. So that's what got me interested from the young age of like 10 or so.
James, are you ready for your turn on the hot seat?
Not when you stare at me like that, JK.
Like it's intimidating.
All right, James, given willing participants, and no, actually, I have a pre-question to ask you. Do you find yourself more of an optimist or a pessimist?
Optimist.
Okay, great. Let me make a note. Given willing participants.
Wait, can I change my answer?
Sure. Are you adjusting your answer?
No.
Okay. Given willing participants and a day of free time to learn and play it, what is the game that's coming off of your shelf of opportunity?
Oh, that's a good question. Weather machine. For sure.
You know, I actually thought about writing an answer down beforehand, and it was going to be Weather Machine.
You got it right. You can predict it.
We're going to do a little newlywed game.
I have started to learn that game twice and put the rule book away twice. Not because it didn't make sense. It just took too long, and life came back, and I had to eat dinner, and I just, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely the one.
So I've known you've had it for a while, and I've been very intrigued by the game. And at Tennessee Game Days, I had the opportunity to pick up a copy as well. And it was new in shrink. And the guy I bought it from, as he handed it over to me, he said, best of luck.
That's what you want to hear when you buy a game.
Yeah. And the sad thing is that I've heard so much about Lacerda over the years that that's the one I finally decided to dive in on. And it's not as complicated as some of his other games, like On Mars or Lisboa, but I still haven't gotten to the table.
Yeah.
I'm so mad at myself.
This is not entry level at all.
Yeah.
So, James, outside of board gaming, do you have any other secret talents?
Maybe.
All right. Would you care to share?
Maybe. yeah. So
we're at the table with a celebrity here.
Man of that talent. I was going to talk about
quit my leading the witness. Sir.
Sorry.
So many moons ago, when my body didn't hurt as much as it does now, I might have moved my body to some beats a little bit in the form of breakdancing in the arcade on metal pads in the form of competitions.
Whoa.
Getting
serious. Competitions.
Yeah. So if you know Dance Dance Revolution, which most people do, there was another game called Pump It Up, which was the Korean version of that. So DDR came from Japan. PIU or Pump It Up came from Korea. And I grew up in the arcades when I was younger, worked at one for a long time. And I just got on that game and played it a lot and ended up going to tournaments and all kinds of things, going around the US and around the world, dancing on an arcade game machine.
Now, I've seen you on these and it's impressive. Is a lot of that learning and repetition, like if you were presented with a brand new game, could you go on it and be just as good as you are on the ones you've been on previously?
You mean like a brand new game of that type?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, so the way that I played it was what was called freestyle. So picture a dude breakdancing on these machines. So it was less about speed and playing the really hard songs and getting the high score. So generally speaking, yeah, because it's just dancing the rhythm and watching the arrows.
Okay.
It kind of comes right back to you.
Okay.
But they're all a little bit different, right? The arrow patterns are different. So, but yeah, that's my secret past. There might be evidence online if you look in the right place.
All right. And my question for you, I know your passion outside of board games is also anime. So James, please explain the ending of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Do you have some dark music to play?
Something somber.
Something very somber. Well, also, do you want to cry?
Oh, no.
I don't know if that's good podcast material. No. You don't want to cry in a podcast. I can't.
One of my favorite shows. I don't know how long it is, 26 episodes, something like that. And for 24 episodes, I'm like, man, I really dig this. This is great. So much action, so much fun. And then two episodes of what? And I've never really gleaned what it's all about.
I don't know if you're meant to.
Okay.
The creator of Evangelion was going through some dark things in his life when those episodes came out. And I don't know if you ever will understand it.
Excellent. Highly recommend. Listeners should go watch it.
Very, very good. Classic.
So, James, what game brought you into board gaming?
Tough question. I played all the classics growing up. I can think of a game on the modern hobby side of things that probably kicked it off. It's in my memory, it's more of like a group of games, but I'll go farther back. I feel like the one that left an imprint on me in terms of always wanting games to be a part of my life was Cribbage. So my grandfather was in the military, served, and he was a aero mechanic. So he worked on the planes. And long story short, when he came out of the military, he made a cribbage board out of one of the propellers, a wooden cribbage board out of a wooden propeller from one of those planes. And so it stayed in the family this entire time. And so I grew up playing cribbage with my dad and my brother. On that wooden cribbage board. And I think that's the thing that's always just had games stuck in my mind, right? Nice. So just it always is just going to come back around at some point. And then I grew up gaming with all my friends, but the game that I feel like always stuck out as feeling like it was my first in the hobby was Citadels. So, but like Citadels, Battlestar Galactica, and Arkham Horror First Edition are all kind of in that grouping of that memory. But I think Citadels is the one that sticks out as like the first hobby game.
Another good game.
All right, JK, that means you're the last one to
it's
take
time,
the hot
JK.
Seat.
Bring it on, kids.
All right, Dwayne, you want to start us off?
I would love to. JK, you are known for teaching a lot of games at our events. What is currently your favorite game to teach?
Ooh, I do like teaching, ironically, Heat, Pedal to the Metal. Among others that I'm liking lately, Castles of Burgundy, the new edition of that that's come out, is really fun to teach. I also really enjoy teaching Monikers, a nice little card game, three rounds of charades, each with progressive difficulty. Getting people involved in that's a lot of fun.
JK, if you had to choose between getting rid of your game table or your aquariums, which would you choose?
I'm going to miss those fish. But they're gone in a heartbeat.
Easy question.
Yep, that was not challenging at all.
Does your wife have any input on that?
Do we need to phone a friend?
You know, we're honestly, you guys have been to my house. I think there's currently, and you haven't even seen them all, there's three, four, five, six, there's seven fish tanks currently. It's down from double digits. We have scaled back. So it would be far easier to scale back fish than it would be to scale back the board game collection.
Okay, I did not know you had seven.
I was about to say, I only know two.
You see the two on the main floor. There's five more upstairs.
JK has, for the listeners out there, two very large aquariums in the main living area of his home.
They're better than some public aquariums I've been to.
Oh, well, thanks. And we have an amazing salt and pepper shaker collection spread through our house, too. It's practically museum quality.
You walk through JK's house slowly and just take it all in.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, speaking of taking it all in, JK, can you please describe what goes on when you enter a vendor hall at a convention?
My mind breaks. I went into Origins. What year did we go? Was that 2022?
Yeah.
2022. Correct. Walked into Origins, and this was my first gaming con. And the first evening was, you know, some gameplay, some hanging out, dinner, lots of fun. They opened up the vendor hall the next day, and I went in with a list. I had three games on my list. I got all three within the first 10 minutes of being in the building, and then just proceeded to go vendor to vendor, game company to game company, asking what was out on their floor, what, you know, explain to me some of your games, and literally buying one at almost everyone. I have never actually conclusively gone back and looked at my bill for that trip, and I don't think I want to. What scares me is that we drove from Nashville to Columbus, Ohio to attend this convention. I went through the first day of shopping, loaded all my games into the house that we were staying in, and kind of spread them all out and looked at what I had, and was really, really concerned that I had not left room in the car for my wife and son to return home based on what I had purchased. So We're going to Gen Con later this year, and I'm a little terrified of what that's going to be. I'm setting a budget. There's no way that I can just go in there willy-nilly.
Well, and I'm there to help you break your budget.
Thank you. Oh, no, no. You got to keep me in line. No.
Yeah, there are friends who will make good advice to other friends. We are not those friends when it comes to board game purchases. Like, oh, no, you can't just get the base game off that Kickstarter. You've got to go all in, or else why are you even doing it?
Got to get the metal pieces.
Should I get game A or game B?
Yes.
Why not both?
Yeah. Why rob yourself of joy?
And then lastly, what was the game that got you into board gaming?
So very similar to you guys. I kind of look at gaming as a like almost a BC AD kind of thing, that as a kid growing up, I played all the standard board games, Scrabble, Monopoly, Clue, everything along those lines. Kind of went through a quiet period where I wasn't playing much, if anything. We had a snowstorm hit Nashville several years ago, and I decided I just wanted to pick up a board game or a puzzle or something to play with my wife that night while we knew we would be housebound. Went over to Books a Million, looked at their shelf, kind of perused the games they had available. Didn't really know all of them, but I grabbed one called Ticket to Ride. And that literally opened up floodgates in terms of what I wanted to play as far as craft games, hobby games, whatever you want to call them. That was my first, and that was about 7 years ago that I bought that. And I think I'm somewhere around currently 400 or so games in the collection, plus expansions, full game room at the house.
Can confirm it is quite a full game room.
All right, listeners, this episode's game of the show was Heat, Pedal to the Metal. Heat is published by Days of Wonder, and the designers are Asgar Harding Gurnerud and Daniel Skold Peterson. The art was done by Vincent Dutrait.
Best artist ever.
I know JK has some thoughts on that. And it was released in 2022. It plays 1 to 6 players, but BGG says it's most gleeful at 5 to 6 players. We got together recently to play Heat, and JK, take us through a little bit of what the game's about.
So thematically, Heat is a racing game. The boards are all racetracks with a variety of straightways and curves. You are going to complete 2 laps, and whoever finishes that second lap, either first or furthest ahead, if there's 2 people that finish it in the same turn, is the winner. But it's not just a racing game. It's actually a hand management game. Each turn, you're going to draw a hand of 7 cards. Most of those cards are going to be speed numbers, anywhere from 0 to 5, with the main ones being 1 through 4, repeated 3 different times in the deck. Depending on what gear you shift your car into, that's determining how many cards you're going to play that turn. So, for example, if you're in first gear, you play 1 card. If you're in fourth gear, you play 4 cards. You determine the speed at which you want your car to travel. And generally, while higher speed is good, you want to be careful in those turns, because if you overexceed the value of the turn using the speed cards, you're going to have some issues with your car that have to be mitigated. Now, there's 2 other types of cards in the deck as well. There are stress cards. Stress cards can show up at any time in your hand, and when you play them, you're going to draw a random speed card off the top of your deck. That can either give you an extra burst of speed or a little chug coasting version of speed. It kind of represents the fact that your driver's lost focus and they're a little bit out of control, so you don't really know what's coming up. The last card in the deck are heat cards. Heat cards start out in your engine, and they serve a variety of purposes. They're going to allow you to push your car beyond its normal limits. If you want to go an extra card, take a heat out of your engine and throw it into your discard. But they also come into play as saviors. If you hit one of those curves too fast and you overexceed the speed limit, that's where the heat cards are going to come out of your engine and go to your discard. Now, what will happen eventually, that discard circles back into your draw deck. And once it's there, those heat cards don't do you any good when they're in your hand. Really, neither do those stress cards if they start to overwhelm you. So you have to kind of figure out as you're going through this race game, how do I get these heat cards back into my engine? How do I mitigate what's in my hand? And how do I stay ahead of the other players? That's Heat, Pedal to the Metal.
All right, so this play of Heat was actually my first play of the game, and I have to say I really enjoyed the game. One of my favorite things in it was the risk-reward of using the stress cards, as well as the idea of, to some degree, since you know the numbers in your deck, you're able to count that deck a little bit, so you know, like, maybe I can take the risk this time because my deck's a little heavier on 1s and 2s than it is 3s and 4s.
I love this game. And spoiler, this was actually my favorite game that came out in 2023. I do like it. I did not do well in our play. I think I finished dead last and had some issues going through curves a little bit too quickly with not enough heat in my engine. It's a risk reward. I failed on my reward though.
Yeah, that was like a huge component of the game for me, that like risk reward, kind of like, how do you balance that? Like, I also super enjoyed the game, but I was like a little bit nervous because when it comes to like games that involve risk, I feel like I'm a very risk averse person. But that ended up helping me. When we played, there were a couple of times where like Dwayne and JK decided to take the riskier approach and they spun out a couple times, and that allowed me to take like my more like maybe reserved approach and kind of like speed ahead.
Kind of like the tortoise to the hare.
Yeah, a little bit.
So I've gone on a journey with Heat, but to speak to that, I will say one thing that I've liked over all of my plays of it is that risk reward, unless you have two amateur racers risking more than they're being rewarded, there's actually a great catch-up mechanic, maybe not a mechanic, but just a balance added into this game where I've always seen players in last place have a chance to come back and win it. And that's kind of left an impression on me every time I've played it.
There is an extra catch each turn that the last player, or in larger groups, the last two players do get to move an additional space, and they get a little extra power to either heat or cool their engine.
Yeah, so I've seen folks that have wiped out really come back strong and actually even win the game.
Yeah, because that's what I think that really helped me. I never spun out, but I think it was like our first turn. Like, we ended up playing this twice, but our like first turn of the first game, I was like, okay, I'm going to go this speed limit. And then I stopped like right in front of like the turn where it's like the speed limit actually like really matters. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Why did I work so hard? Like, the speed limit's like kind of like high. Why did I work so hard to just stop right in front of it when I could have given myself some room to like really surpass it on the next turn? And so I was like kind of beating myself up. I was like in last, but then I got to use that adrenaline boost for a couple times in that. And it's like that like straightaway that's like at the very end of the track before you like loop around into your next turn, where I'm just like, all right, this is where I'm going to put my stress cards. I'm going to like risk it all here, because it's like I didn't have the negative effect of like being close to a turn.
Yeah, it was really impressive how they did that. I will say, so I mentioned that I've kind of been on a journey with Heat. My first play, when this came out, there was so much hype built around this. I mean, the next big game from Days of Wonder, that they hadn't put out a big game in a long time.
They've put out some bad games for a few years in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, this one was coming out. It was getting lots of buzz. Everyone seemed to be loving it. And then it came out and all the reviews were just amazing. And I finally got a chance to play it. And I walked away just not knowing how to feel about it. Now, that's probably the environment I was playing it in. It was a full player set. Loud. Hard to understand some of the rules. And I left just wondering. I'm not sure how I felt about that game that everyone else seems to love so much.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you brought up the rules. We also like had our own rules clarification that we had to do in the middle of our first game about those stress cards that JK was telling us about. Is he told us about that they were like bad for our hand, and then like we started playing and then we were just like discarding
them. Yeah, because they're bad for your hand. Why not discard them?
Yeah.
Well, there's a reason you can't discard them, because you can't discard
you
them.
you can never discard the stress or the heat cards out of your hand.
Which was like also hilarious, because it's once that got clarified, we all looked at the cards and we're like, oh, that's what that trash can with a red slash through it means. One of our listeners and regular to the board game group, Kristen, she was amazing, sent us in a review and talked about how like learning the rules and mechanics was a bit overwhelming for her too. There's like all of those icons at the top of the player boards that are just like so like lovely, like explained so well in the rule book. But it's like if someone told you the rule book once and then you're just going off these icons, like sometimes it takes like a couple turns to like really get it to set in.
I have this to say. I have played a lot of board games. I have played a lot of board games that have some strange iconography. And every time I sit down and I presented with a board of icons, I start getting a little nervous. But I know by the end of the second, third turn, I will know what all those icons mean. But it is that initial just looking at those hieroglyphics on a page and like, I don't think I can do this.
Now, one thing we should also mention, as Emily said, we played two rounds of this. And the first round we played was the straight out of the box base level game, which is no frills, no thrills. The second round, we added some modifications, and the game gives you at least three different modules that you can play with. One of them is weather effects, which does impact what's going on the track around you. The other is asymmetric powers for your cars, where you do a draft prior to the race, where you'll end up with at least three different cards that kind of modify your car and do a different thing than any other player. Those came into play for the second race, which I still lost.
I just think I love when board games do the, here's the basic game. Here's, you can sit down and you can kind of get into this game without knowing anything about it in a few minutes. Once you've done that, here's some extra stuff for you to play around with. But I'll say this, the base game on its own, perfectly fun.
Oh yeah. That's what, like, that's one of my favorite things to look for in board games, like the variability potential of a game. And you're so right, like that base game by itself was perfectly pleasant, like would play that one again. And it's like one of those games where it's like, okay, I feel like I've kind of worked out the strategy that works for me and works for this me within this group of people. But then like bringing in the extra modules, it's like, okay, now I need to figure this one out. And it's just like, it's very interesting how each scenario can be different with those modules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's nice about that is, I mean, each map, the game comes with a number of different tracks for you to play on. So there's variability already in the box. But when you start adding all those modules, for me, it made a significant difference in my enjoyment of the game. I did like the base game a lot. But once you threw those modules in, it really, I mean, completely changed how I was kind of approaching my hand management. I mean, I was going through my deck faster. It was one of the big things I noticed. I kind of cycled through my hands and my decks a lot quicker because some of the cards that we had drafted in the beginning was causing that to happen. So one of those modules that we can play with is at the very beginning of the game, you have all these extra car parts and upgrades you can add to your hand. And some of those really affect how fast cards move in and out of your hand. So I really enjoyed that. Love the modifications where you can add weather effects and things that are affecting the track. It really made a big difference for me. So, I mean, personally, I would always want to play with some of those modules if possible.
Speaking of four different boards, can we talk for a minute of how beautiful this game is and how well the components fit into the organizer, what the overall package looks like?
Oh yeah, it's we already talked about the icons a little bit, but it's like once you know what those icons are, they're just like it's clear as day, and like it fits so well. I remember when we were playing the game, we're talking about how thematically it just fits so well with like the gameplay. It's just like, yeah, like you like got to spend the heat to like go up to gear shifts at a time, otherwise like you just go from second to third gear. You can't cool down if you're in fourth gear, like you're going too fast. And it's just it's very pretty.
That's Vincent. Vincent's fantastic.
Yeah, the artwork is, I mean, the whole production on this package is just really, really well done. Vincent, of course, just brings it to another level. I mean, just the way he integrates all the drivers and the environments into the gameplay. I mean, just did a really great job.
It's easy to see why this game was as scarce as it was when it was first released. Because it was for a while. I know at Gen Con, like, so there was a company that was giving away a copy of it. And just sitting there looking at their table for a few minutes, so many people came by. How much is heat? How much is heat? How much is heat? Everybody was looking for this game because it was impossible to find. And I think the artwork plays a big part in that. It's just a beautiful game to look at.
For sure. I think, I mean, there's been a lot of racing games that are well known that have been around for a long time, but I don't think there had been a new racing game like this in a very long time. So when it finally landed, it just, you know, people ate it up. It was just super hot.
Yeah, if any listeners are familiar with the game Flamme Rouge, which is a bicycle racing game, this is by the same designers. They've kind of taken what they input for Flamme Rouge, revised it, added a few more elements, of course, totally changed the theme to race cars instead, but that's where we land now. Sounds like you guys are all thinking pretty positively about this game. How would you rate it?
Well, let me say, so I do want to mention at least one thing before we go to the rating. I am thinking positively about it, but is there anything that you didn't like about the game? I mean, I have one thing that I think might turn people off.
Yeah, that's... I had one comment. I had made a comment to myself based off of our experience of like, it didn't quite feel like the like rich get richer type of game where it's like the person who's in first always stays in first. But in our experience, it definitely felt like the person who stayed in last for a bit. But in Kristen's, going back to Kristen's review, she was saying that she played a super kind of like reserved game. Like she did not try to like burn her heat, just tried to keep it out of her hand the entire game. So she was in last and she even got lapped one time. And so it's like, that stinks if you're having that kind of game experience, but somehow like she was able to leapfrog her way back up and won her game.
Wow.
I did see when you said the person that stayed in last for a while, your eyes kind of darted to my side of the table for a minute there. Thanks, Emily.
Well, there were a few moments where like Dwayne even, for example, like spun out on two turns.
At least two turns. I had like, a rough second
like,
game.
And when I say turns, I mean like the turns on the board
yes.
during one of his own turns. Like, so two hairpins, one turn. And so he had to go back. Like
it was pretty glorious.
It was amazing. Something.
In the game's defense, I was making bad decisions, as I am apt to do.
And then, like, sometimes it's bad decisions. Sometimes it's bad math. Because JK had a moment. Talking about the artwork of the game, it gives you how many spaces you are to the turn. Not to be confused with the speed limit of the turn. And so JK was like, all right, I'm six spaces away. I'm going to pull out seven speed and I only have to burn one heat. But the turn that he had just passed was like a speed limit of two or three.
Yeah, I felt pretty much like an idiot after doing that. I was the one that taught the game and explained how to handle curves and I borked it right away.
I will say that if you don't like randomness, I don't think there's a lot of randomness in this game, but you are drawing cards. You can get a bad hand draw sometimes. And while you can somewhat mitigate it by, as Dwayne so aptly described it, being a hand management game, or JK, right? I mean, if you're able to manage that, it doesn't hit you too hard, but you can get a bad draw every now and then and feel like you have nothing to do.
Or it's like you think you've managed your hand so well, and then it's just that last draw of five cards just messes with your perfect plan to get around that turn.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, nothing stood out as a huge negative to me. I will say I found it super helpful, and I've seen this happen in all three games that I've played. Even though the step-by-step rules or the step-by-step motions for a player's turn is printed right there on the board, I have had one person kind of like almost DM or GM the game. Right, kind of run, help people run through their turns to make sure it goes through. Because every player's turn is like seven steps.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's all right there, it can somehow every time just get easy to get lost. I don't know how it happens.
Yeah.
And the best games I've played of this is somebody just always paying attention to whose turn it is and helping us go step by step by step. And so I would recommend that if you're teaching this to a group or you're playing it, right, having someone like that who can help people, you know, it's not that anyone's asking for help. It just kind of helps push things along and make sure nothing's getting missed.
Yeah, I know. I always like wanted to skip a step and go like straight to discarding. And it's the icons are there for a reason. And so it's just going step by step just ensures that you're not missing out on any opportunities of that turn.
And even within a step, there can be several sub-steps.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So we were fortunate to have JK kind of leading us through like what our options were on each step. And as a new player, I really appreciated that.
Yeah. James, I actually thought you were going to mention this one on your disdain. There is one icon on the player boards that as of yet, we can't find this listed in the rule book anywhere.
Or on BGG
or
forums.
On BGG. No. Now, heat, you can tell from looking inside the box. And of course, we do know that there's a heat heavy rain is coming out this year. they definitely primed the game for expansions. So it is possible that this one symbol that really doesn't make sense to anybody yet might be for the expansions, or it might have just been their way of saying this symbol doesn't mean anything. Who knows?
Yeah, it's like step five of your turn. They give you four different symbols, but they're not all applicable in the base game. But they don't explain it very well in the rule book, which ones are applicable. And so I've seen games go sideways during the teach when people are they're trying to follow their player boards and they get to that step and they're trying to like, so what do I do now? There's four options. Well, actually, there's only two. You ignore these other two.
Right.
But why? Well, it just gets really confusing. So, but other than that, yeah, just lots and lots of fun. I mean, I almost can't think of anybody that wouldn't enjoy playing this just because it's kind of a hoot and holler situation when you have the right group.
No secret for me. As I said, this was my number one game of last year and is in my all-time top 10 right now. This is definitely a recommend from me.
All right, so let's make it official, everybody. So every time we talk about a game, we're going to give each of our hosts an option. You can either keep it to play or trade it away. JK, let's start with you.
Absolutely keep this game.
For me, definitely keep it to play.
I am also keeping it to play.
I will keep it to play as well. And with four keep it to plays, that means that this game has a rating of 4 on our Glee meter.
Woo!
Glee meter! The Glee meter.
And we can't forget the most important detail of our game of the show experience.
Is that who won the game?
Not just the first game, but both games. Yes.
Way to rub it in.
Yep. Yep. Listeners, it was me.
Well done, Emily.
Yay! Well done.
It is such an honor to receive this award as the first game of the show winner. No, I'm kidding. No, it was amazing. I went in. Oh, no, I'm being played off.
Yes. Does John Cena present this award naked for Emily?
Oh, please don't. But
you may be the first person. I mean, if John Cena wants to give me an award naked, well, I'm fine with that. Wait, he's naked, not me, right? No, that wouldn't be good. Okay, good. Yes. Also, if
so back
you
back to our family friendly podcast.
Yes, absolutely. If you will look on our Instagram in a short time, you will see our picture of the results.
Yes.
And there is a little, we put a little ode to a classic Nintendo game in that picture.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we'll see if the listeners can see it or not.
Yeah. So as the winner of our very first game of the show, I get to pick our next game. And the other hosts do not know what this game is going to be. Do you guys?
And I'm very nervous because I think it might be Ark Nova.
So our next game of the show is going to be Space Base.
Space Base.
Oh. Space Base.
All right.
Okay.
So has anyone, I know Dwayne owns it. You've played it, right?
Played it several times.
All right, JK, James?
I might have all the expansions.
That should be fun. So, yeah. I picked this game because I recently taught it at Tennessee Game Days, TGD, and realized that I had oversimplified it in my memory. So I kind of wanted another opportunity to reteach it to the hosts, and then we'll get to talk about it next episode.
All right, and listeners, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Space Base. Send your reviews to pod@gleefulmeeple.com for a chance to have your review highlighted on our next episode.
All right, so I think we've talked enough about games that it's time to play a game on air. No, not a board game, a game about board games. Dwayne has brought a game for us to play. It is a game that will definitely have us thinking outside of the box or outside of the title. Fellow Gleeples, feel free to play along wherever you are or just listen to hear us attempt the mashup.
All right, everybody. Since I don't have any original ideas of my own, I've decided to create new board games from existing board games and some other media, personalities, maybe even other board games. Your job will be to guess the clever name that I've given my new game by mashing the names I'm alluding to in each description. For example, if I said, imagine how much more fun war will be when the developer of The Sims publishes their take on this classic World War II strategy game, the answer I'd be looking for is Maxis and Allies.
Oh,
okay.
Wow. All right. Woo.
You have a lot of faith in us, Dwayne.
This is going to go very well.
Listeners, be prepared for some silence.
Silences that will probably be cut out for time.
So, Emily.
Yes.
Emily, I'm going to start with you.
I'm very nervous.
All right. Emily, in this new board game, you can learn all about the dangers of capitalism on the streets of Atlantic City as seen through the eyes of the alleged assassin of JFK. What is the name of my game?
Oh, no. Okay, can you say the capitalist part, the first part?
Yeah. Learn about the dangers of capitalism on the streets of Atlantic City.
Oh, no. Can I phone a friend?
Yep. We can pass it around the circle.
All right. JK, what do you think?
JK's up next.
JK is chiming in and saying Monopoly Harvey Oswald.
Monopoly Harvey Oswald is correct. And JK. That is a point for JK.
Way to steal it.
I was looking for the Lee, and I was like, Lee. I didn't think it would be the last syllable of a word.
Oh, yeah. They can get kind of tricky. JK, I had you in mind when I wrote this question.
God.
I hope this will work.
Sure.
Bob and Doug McKenzie are going to have to send their workers for malt, hops, and yeast, as well as plan brewery shifts to make their award-winning beer.
Strange Brew Crafters.
Strange Brew Crafters is nice. Correct. That is a point for JK. James, we're over to you.
Please, no.
I'm here for you. It's okay.
Yeah, JK's our lifeline.
Mark McKenney and his company find themselves helping rebuild an underground troll kingdom. Watch out for those falling statues, or I'll be squishing your head.
Mark McKenney.
JK's just dancing.
JK, I can't look at you.
Sorry.
JK got it before.
One more time, please.
Yeah. Mark McKenney and company find themselves helping rebuild an underground troll kingdom. Watch out for those falling statues, or I'll be squishing your head.
I don't know.
All right. We're going to pass to
Emily. Not knowing Mark McKenney is probably not helping me.
We're going to pass to Emily next, but I think JK's primed. So if you have any part of it, you may want to give Emily the hint. You got anything off of it?
I might have an idea.
Okay.
Kids might be involved.
Kids. Oh, no.
Kids in the what?
Kids in the bathroom?
All right. We're gonna
kids in the hall.
All right. No. All right. You want to take a shot?
No, I still don't know it.
I'll send it to JK.
I don't either, yeah.
Kids in the Hall of the Mountain King.
Kids in the Hall of the Mountain King is correct. That is a point for JK.
JK, you are the winner.
All right. Little known fact that Emily and I actually attended the same literature and arts high school here in.
Yes, we did.
Although not around the same time. But Emily, here's your literature question.
Oh, no.
Vonnegut protagonist Billy Pilgrim is unstuck in time and thrown in the land of 1001 nights. As long as he's played Mancala before, he should get the gist of the game.
As long as he's played Mancala? I think you're referencing Arabian Nights.
Oh, no. That's a good guess, though. That's a good guess. JK is next in the order, but JK, with 3 points, I'm going to pass to James just to see if he has an idea.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Absolutely. Vonnegut protagonist Billy Pilgrim is unstuck in time and thrown in the land of 1001 nights. As long as he's played Mancala before, he'll get the gist of this game.
Nope.
All right, JK, what you got?
Slaughterhouse Five Tribes.
Slaughterhouse Five Tribes is correct.
There you go.
Okay, oh, I'm just going to quietly say I like this game. This is fun.
JK, since you have the lead, let's give James and Emily, let's give James and Emily a chance to catch up.
Fair.
James. Play as the owner of Springfield's favorite dive bar, attempting to lure nobles in through clever dice drafting and deck building.
Okay. No, I'm halfway there. See the last half?
Mm-hmm. Let me go through the whole thing, because sometimes it's hard for me to split this in half. Learn about the... Nope, that's the wrong one. Play as the owner of Springfield's favorite dive bar, attempting to lure nobles in through clever dice drafting and deck building.
lure nobles in through clever dice drafting and deck building. I got so many nobles games of dice drafting, but I can't get the deck building piece of the puzzle. I mean, I know how it starts. It's Mo something.
What does Mo own?
A tavern.
A bar.
What's Mo's last name? Sizzlack. Think of how many games have Sizzlack in the title.
What? You're throwing me off, JJ.
He is throwing you off big time. Emily's on the right track.
Moe's Taverns of Tiefenthal.
We will give it to James.
Hey.
Can I get a point for the assist?
We'll give half points for the assist. All right. Emily, I think that brings us to your question. I lost track, but I'm just going to do the way that seems most fun. Attempt to become the most influential clan in Japan, but don't let the master builder's pricing force you into building activity rooms next to sleeping chambers.
Is that last one Castles of Mad King Ludwig?
You've got the last part. Can you give me the first part?
Castles. Japanese what was it?
Attempt to become the most influential clan in Japan.
Oh, no. I know I've seen this game title before, too. We're all, like, browsing Dwayne's board game wall to see if we can jog our memory.
And unfortunately, you have the half of the game. You have the game that I own. You've already got that half of it.
I have an idea.
Same.
What's your idea, James?
Let's go. Let's pass it over to James first. We'll go out of order.
The White Castle of Mad King Ludwig.
The White Castle of Mad King Ludwig is correct.
White Castle.
Okay, JK. You think you're so clever. Let's see how you do with our final question. Create the perfect cinnamon gum when trying to manage your hand in Pierce Brown's dystopian future.
We may have stumped him.
What?
And by we, I mean Dwayne.
Pierce Brown's dystopian future. I don't know. I have one dystopian future game in mind, but it's not lining up with anything that I could use a cinnamon gum for. I don't know.
What game involves James?
Cinnamon gum? One more time, Dwayne. Yeah. One more time.
Create the perfect cinnamon gum. I'm sorry. I just cracked myself up with my own dumb clue. Create the perfect cinnamon gum when trying to manage your hand in Pierce Brown's dystopian future. I am looking around the table at some stumped
faces. Is managing your hand in the cinnamon gum game?
It is part of the mechanic of the board game portion of this.
Big Red Rising?
Big Red Rising is correct.
There it is.
All right.
I was like, what game has you make?
Well, I was going,
gum.
Neuroshima Hextra? I don't know what he...
So, I'm coming back.
So that was our last question. And if I have done my math correctly, it looks like JK had 4 points, James had 2 points, and Emily had a half a point.
JK, last in the racetrack, first on the brain track.
Here
we go.
Like we flipped.
Nice game, Dwayne. Nice game.
All right, guys, that's enough of us talking for tonight. So let's talk about what's coming up next. Gleeful Meeple will be, if you are listening to this on March 15th, when this episode is going to air, our next events will be Monday at Fat Bottom, as well as Wednesday at Homegrown Tavern in Donelson. You can also reach us on our social media. Again, that email address that was given out earlier is pod@gleefulmeeple.com. You can also find us on Instagram at Gleeful Meeple Pod.
Yes.
No cast. There's no cast, except for the cast that's here. Say goodnight, guys. I'm JK. I've had a wonderful time.
I'm James. See you next time.
I'm Emily. See you later.
And this is Dwayne. Bye, everybody.
Bye.